for a possibility of blocking signals, decreasing the range of the receiver. So there'll be some good things, but not always, not everyone. We will survive. So that's that insight for kind of think if I never really watched anything kind of being built in my location. And here in Brooklyn, it's a very residential area. There wasn't that much. I could stroll over to the island and see they were building those big apartment complexes and such. But locally, things have been thankfully quite static and stable. This morning during the 10-meter test, I was discussing with other people the infrastructure for electric vehicles and such, and I was reminded of how there was a massive infrastructure for gasoline-based cars when I was in here. There were two gas stations within one block distance of me. They're both gone. One has turned into basically just a storage lot, and the other was carved out into a bunch of new homes. But the number of gas stations has plummeted. I was thinking of Googling it to see what it's gone down to, but it must have gone down by something like 60% over the last 50 years.
Oh, yeah, time marches on. And, you know where all the hospitals are. I could have walked in 5 minutes to LIJ. That's how close. LIJ is right on top of these buildings. So, yeah. And at that place, you know, it was only a... You know, it was a... Not a big hospital when I was a kid. Now it's just massive complex, extension after extension. The parking situation, it's built layer after layer. So much work that has gone on in the last, you know, 50, 60 years there. It's not recognizable. When I was a kid, it was a big field, of course, you know. People used to shoot bow and arrows out. Now forget it, you know. It's amazing to watch things change. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I mean, that's a curious aspect of medical centers. Occasionally, unfortunately, medical centers just kind of collapse in on themselves, figuratively, not literally, and they just go out of business. But successful medical centers build out, and over and over and over again. I used to have a joke to get into medical school, the entrance requirement should be that they let you in one entrance of the hospital facility, and you have to make it to the maze-like other end under a certain amount of time, and you're able to do that, they accept you to medical school.
Okay, like a factory. You would go in not knowing anything, by the time you come out, you're a surgeon.
It's just the convoluted nature, as you mentioned. What they do is they build other buildings. And then, of course, they have to build connections to the other buildings so that the employees can go from building to building because they are interrelated and they serve different purposes for the same group of people, and you don't want to have them go outside, inside, outside, inside. So there's tunnel systems, there's basement tunnel systems that are different than the overhead tunnel system. It's amazing. A lot of these counties, especially where I trained, was amazing. There are other facilities that are much more intricate and maze-like than King County.
Okay, very good. Yeah. I know where a lot of the hospitals are because I worked with so many of them. You know, St. Vincent's in the city, and a lot of them out here. And just massive complex. Stony Brook, of course. And they're getting bigger all the time. They're not going to stop, especially with an aging population. So noisy, but you're still okay. Boy, you're a lot better with the higher power. My guess next week will be, you know, be a big difference if we don't have this kind of weather. That'd be big to end.
Yeah, I'm not sure next week will be much better. You know, what's happening is that the hospitals are kind of coalescing under a smaller group of people running the ball. Unfortunately, the total number of hospital beds have declined over the last 10, 15, 20 years, and the insurance companies have kind of motivated everyone to get people out as soon as they possibly can to a lot of what used to be hospital-based procedures in office. And so, you know, when COVID hit, there was a dearth of intensive care units. So hopefully people are rethinking that optimizing for profitability aspects of our national health care. Anyway, it's been loads of fun. We must do this again real soon. Let me remind you that if you want to contact me, my email address is mailbag@ATQPS.com. I will mention that if you want to contact a book, it can be easily reached at spacenetreports@gmail.com. And also want to remind people we have a link page of interesting YouTube and articles. Type in roy.atqps.com. We have audio stream of the Glen Oaks Theater 24/7. Type into your browser headnet.atqps.com. And always, I like to remind people of my station, WNJR's great archive site called amateurradio.tv. It has over a million visitors and the archive of the segment.
One topic and I'm key, I always look for, you know, comments or something. If I'm sounding bad, let me know and, you know, we'll just call it quits. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, I will do that. Right now, you're at about 20% noise.
Yeah, I guess 55 watts out. Okay, well, I could turn the antenna around and try Selvin, but I guess that's not going to change. It's not going to change what's happening in Glen Oaks. This will be fine for now. Anyway, last Tuesday, by the way, this is WS2N for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet. Last Tuesday, I watched supposedly we were going to watch a landing from a private Japanese company. They had the kilometers up, which is like 60 miles. It had a braking engine on it, and then thought it was falling down, and it took about maybe 45 minutes, went behind the moon, and started to come in for, looked like it was going to be a successful landing. The telemetry was on there, speed, altitude, got lower and lower. Toward the end, they said it was around 300 feet up, and it was still dropping, but the speed was slowing down, and they got down to like, you know, maybe 20, 30 miles an hour as it was coming down. But then they noticed the speed picked up again, and so it was probably 30 seconds before it was all in. So that tells them that the engine must have shut off, and it must be accelerating. So they believe what happened is they crashed into the moon because they never heard boo after about 30, 40 seconds before landing. And there was no other transmission. So apparently that did not make it. So Kutu came to an end. iSpace has another one of these things lined up for next year. The year after that, it's going to watching them every year for at least 9 flights, they said. So their goal is to eventually help supply materials that would be needed for the bottom of this program. They don't get involved with that. Anyway, it's a private company. It would have been the first private company to land successfully on the moon so far. It's just the United States, China, and USSR. Russia, of course, has not really done it. It was the Soviet Union back then. But, so it failed. We're looking for another one maybe next year. Maybe they'll figure out how to put maybe more fuel on board. They believe it ran out of fuel. So, Makuto has joined two other ones that I'm not going to say recently, but 2019, four years ago. Israel tried the same thing. He tried to bring a spacecraft down called the Barashit. We found that on the net as well. They got very close to landing. They believe it did a 180 face the wrong direction before the end. The landing, the rocket came on, and they feel it accelerated. And they think it hit the moon like 500 miles an hour. And so that wasn't good. The other one was that had the same kind of problem as another country, India. The India Space Research Organization, ISRO, tried to do a similar thing. They had the Chandrayaan 2 moon landing, also 2019, 2 years ago. And as they came in, they were trying to land on the moon as well. Out, everything was still good. A similar problem happened, so that's 3 failures in a row. Hopefully in the near future, I'll mention that. 2 other ones that are under development that look like they have a better chance of succeeding. Cover that in a minute. Let me just see if there's anybody with any comments. Very good. Again, noisy, so I hope I can hear you. Paul W.S. Glenn.
Hello, Paul. You're also kind of noisy. Today is, maybe a technical thing going on. I have a question, but let me know when I can ask you this question.
Too noisy. I heard I have a question, and then you got a little bit noisy, and I couldn't copy the question. So this might be tough. Let's try again.
Well, I turned up the power. Hope you can hear me. I have a question, but it's not related to what you're talking about. It's about SpaceX and the last failed launch.
Okay. I heard you very good that time, and well, they had one tonight that was successful, right in the beginning of the net. Actually, Roy let me know about it. I completely forgot about it, went over to the website, and they had a Falcon Heavy takeoff tonight, and right in the first 15 minutes of the net, I put that on my tablet, and that was successful. And they put a communication satellite up at geosynchronous orbit. It's a Falcon Heavy. That's the 3 of them bolted together. And they launched a 6-ton, it's like 6 cars, the weight of 6 cars, into geosynchronous orbit. Massive solar panels and all. But which one are you talking about? Are you talking about the Starship that they had a problem with? Back to you. I got a mental block. What's your name again? I forgot.
Paul, my name is David. No problem. And, it was a few days ago, maybe less than a week ago. For some reason, the engine would not disengage from the rest of the rocket, ends up exploding. My interest in this is satellite telephone. Satellite telephone and what the implications are for that.
Yeah, that's coming. I remember you asked that a while back, and at the time, it didn't sound like it was going to be feasible. But as the year or two has gone by, it sounds like it's definitely in the cards, not only with SpaceX, but a couple of other companies thinking about the same thing. SpaceX has their Starlink satellites that they've been launching. They got like 4,000 of them up there now, all launched with the Falcon. Falcon 9 rocket, and each time they launch like 50 at a time. But now they've developed a bigger satellite. Now, the small one is the one that they originally were sending up. I think it was like, I don't know, 12 feet long or something. Now the new ones are like 18 feet long. The original ones had one solar panel sticking out of the side. This one has two of them. Solar panels like 30 feet long, you know, long from end to end. So more power, more capability. And these are the newer ones. Now, they can't launch 52 at a time like they've been doing. They can only do about 21 at a time. But they're big enough and sensitive enough to not only transmit down to cell phones, I think that's the easy part, but they're going to be able to receive cell phone transmissions. And now there's even a newer version coming out after that. This is like an intermediate version that they built, and they're trying to get these things going. And again, launching 20 at a time is not really going to cut it. They want to be able to do 50 or 60 or more at a time. Their plan is to eventually have this Starship that you were talking about earlier, which is not only designed to launch people, but it's also designed to launch cargo. And I've seen animation of what it would look like. You know, the Starship would get up into orbit, and these things would come out one at a time from inside. A door would open up, and these massive satellites, hundreds of pounds each. Well, give you an idea, the smaller ones that they launched all these years weigh 500 pounds. So these bigger ones are probably going to be, you know, 1,000 pounds or more when they put this into the Starship. I haven't heard how many they're going to be able to launch at a time, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they could get like 50 or 100 of these things inside the Starship. So that's the plan. If they could work these things, the two of them together, not only, you know, will they accomplish their main goal of internet connections, you know, what they're doing now with version 1, but with this version 2, I think it's called version 2.1, is going to be have capability, but also, you know, hoping for cell phone communication as well. Back to you, David.
QSL, Paul. Well, you know, there are three things that come to my mind. One is 10 gigabit Ethernet. That means that you could have up to 10,000 megabit per second internet. The capability is quite amazing. And I get a lot of information about these launches on the social media. And the other thing I wanted to say is from the ground to the satellite, what is the average distance,
go ahead? Yeah, ground to the satellite is like 300 miles. That's, you know, there's going to be some in a little lower orbit and some in a little higher orbit. But they're looking at 300 miles, roughly 100 miles, maybe 75 miles higher than the International Space Station travels. This way, you know, they won't ever interfere with that. So the latency rate or time is very low. When you transmit up or transmit down, it's, you know, really low milliseconds. If you were to have, let's say, one at geosynchronous orbit, you know, at 23,000 miles up, you know, that would be a noticeable latency time for, you know, real-time conversation. That's what they plan on doing. 300-mile range. There's another company called OneWeb. They're running around 600 miles high. They're not going to have as many satellites, but they're involved with this as well. They're a completely different company. Back to you, Dave.
QSL Paul. Well, if it's 300 miles from a cell phone to satellite, maybe there is some intermediate device in between, like a tower, a phone tower, or some kind of device that can relay the signal up to the satellite.
Well, Iridium has that now. You know, they've had that for years. Where you could talk direct to the Iridium satellite. You know, they have antennas sticking out of it, you know. They're a lot bigger than a cell phone. It looks like an HD. An antenna sticking out of it. So, you know, it's only step after that before you could actually get your cell phone maybe to transmit up to these satellites. And Iridium is also at a higher elevation, so I think it's possible. I'm sure they'll have a gateway system with towers and everything wherever they can. I'd be able to use Verizon or something to talk to them, and then, you know, they might transmit up to the satellites, you know, wherever it's possible. But let's say you're out in the middle of nowhere, or on a ship, you know, or a plane, you know, you want to be able to, the ideal world would be to use cell phones to communicate with SpaceX. That's, you know, part of his plan, from what I read. Only time will tell. Back to you, Dave.
QSL, Paul. But I would say it's probably very good to keep an eye on what Elon Musk is doing, because I think it's pretty much the cutting edge, you know? And learn a lot from that.
Yeah, okay. And like I said, OneWeb is involved in doing this. Eventually you're going to see Amazon. They have a Kuiper system that they're developing. They've already let out, I think, I forget how many billions of dollars worth of contracts to different rocket companies to send their satellites. They haven't sent any up yet, but they have plans of doing it as well. Elon Musk is definitely ahead of everybody. China is putting up their constellation system that they're getting involved with. Interesting thing about SpaceX satellites, by the way, they, you know, if something goes wrong with them and they need to deorbit it, they can do that. They have fuel on board. The latest ones are, well, the earliest ones were run on Krypton gas. Krypton gas, it ionized and they use that for thrusting. But now they've gone to a cheaper one, which is argon gas. So these things can maneuver around in space. There's a problem. They can deorbit them. This way, you won't wind up with thousands of satellites that are garbage over time. They'll be able to deorbit within a week or so they find out they fail. So he takes that into consideration as well. They went with the argon gas instead of the krypton gas because it's cheaper, cheaper fuel. And when they use krypton gas, most of these satellites that have been running on electro-propulsion systems were all using xenon gas. Xenon gas is a very heavy kind of gas. That type is used for propulsion, but it's very expensive. So not only is SpaceX very advanced in what they're doing, they're very conscious about saving costs when you have thousands of satellites up there. I'm sure it's not only Elon Musk. He's got to have engineers that really know what they're doing, and I'm sure he eventually gets fed back to him. Back to you, Dave. WS2N.
WS2N from KG2RY. Well, I think whatever happens up in space, satellite communication, it'll probably almost take place right down on the earth, in the earth, that if they're going to be 5,000 megabit internet from satellite, there'll be 4,000 megabit internet from cable, and I'm sure the competition will make it really interesting.
Yeah, I don't know what the speeds are. It sounds like you're up on that. I know that a lot of the existing satellites are KU band. That is, for these types of systems. Now, switching over to KA, that's even way higher frequencies. So you naturally, you'll be able to do a lot more satellites will be able to handle all these cell phones, and towers, and who knows what, airplanes, ships at sea. And we'll see. I mean, his goal was to put all this into operation and make money on it, and that the money he makes on this is supposed to help pay for all these building of the starships themselves, so he could eventually get to the moon and Mars. I guess the same thing with the cars as well. We'll see. I'm not going to hold my breath for him to get to Mars, but I think he's got a shot to make it to the moon with NASA. We'll see. Any other comments? WS2.
Do you think that like Spectrum or Verizon, Fios, or even cell phones could tap into this communication with satellites? Go ahead.
I don't know. I guess technically it's possible. So we'll see. I really don't know. I haven't studied the frequencies or the systems that they're using. I do know about the phased antennas that they're using at home, phased array antennas. Elon Musk has them. You can buy them. And you can have an internet connection right now to the Starlink satellite. Each one costs money. I think it costs you around $500 to get set up. Is that going to be like put aside, and eventually everybody's just going to be walking around with the cell phones? Who needs the phased array antenna anymore? If you could contact everybody, including the halls of Congress, with everything from the Library of Congress on your cell phone. You won't need a base station anymore. You won't need a phased array antenna system looking up the sky. should be interesting. Come back a couple of years from now, and 5, 10 years, and see what's going on. Back to you, Dave, then I'm going to move on.
QSL, thanks, Paul. I just want to say it was very interesting. And, you know, take out an HT, talk to 5 repeaters in the urban center, and you don't need a cell phone, you don't need anything but the HT73KG2RY.
Okay, yeah, some people have spoken to the space station 250 miles up with a... I've gotten real lucky, and I've actually used an HT mostly. You know, you probably have a Yagi. I've seen that, where you take a Yagi, hook up to your HT, point it up to the sky, and you know where the space station is. You're good to go. Well, by moving out across the sky, it's duplicating what a phased array would do. Phased array is picking up the signal from space, and it knows where the, you know, based on, you know, on that information, it knows where it is, and your phased array will follow the satellites across the sky as they go, and as they go over the horizon, they'll pick up the new ones. And if you're talking, you won't be able to tell the difference. It's just like going from cell phone tower to cell phone tower here on Terra Firma. Anyway, there's a couple of other topics I wanted to cover, including NASA Perseverance rover. I've covered that topic many, many times, but an interesting thing happened recently with that. In the front left wheel, now these wheels are probably, there's 6 wheels on a rover, and each one is, I think, around 22 inches in diameter. The front left wheel, over a year ago, a rock, you know, kind of, as it was driving on a tilt, a rock rolled down a little embankment and rolled inside of this wheel. Naturally, these wheels were all metal. Big cylinder. And for the last year or so, this is over 400 days, it's been driving around, and this thing has been rolling around as the wheel turns. The rock starts to go up, and then it rolls back down into the wheel well and over again. Not causing any damage, not causing any kind of problems, just riding around with Perseverance for over a year. But recently, a couple of weeks ago, somewhere along the line, Perseverance made a turn. It might have been on another hill. Anyway, the rock finally rolled out of the wheel well onto the ground, and they confirmed that with the hazard cams on board Perseverance. Perseverance has about 21 different cameras on board Curiosity and 17. Anyway, this has a few more, and they were able to confirm that the rock was gone. I thought that was an interesting story. You know, I mean, Perseverance has been doing so much scientific work. They've taken carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. They've made oxygen out of it, separated the carbon from the oxygen, and they've done this over and over again. That's called the MOXIE experiment. A lot of different experiments going on Perseverance. Right, so this was one of the cooler ones, this rock that rode around with the rover for over a year. Any comments?
WB2BXO.
How you doing, Frank?
You said that was such a sad voice, Paul. Anyway, a couple of comments. I did back again just before 9/11. I remember reading Ray Seifer's article on working the early OSM satellites with an HT. And I did actually make a couple of contacts using HT and you know, those dual-band duplex HT and a horsewhip antenna, you know, on obviously a very crowded channel. It's very difficult to do from the East Coast, but made a couple of contacts that way. And made a sunset parrot contact, single frequency parrot, with I think it was my 10 watt radio inside my apartment in Brighton Beach. You know, New York City apartments are essentially RF proof. You don't need much power to hit a low Earth orbit satellite. And I did use got a free calling card for the Iridium phone on a cruise ship years ago and used that to call my parents. And they said, oh, you're home already. I mean, the quality of the phone call with no latency was so good. It sounded like I was home in Brooklyn or Philadelphia, not on a cruise ship on the Pacific Ocean. Go ahead.
Yes, right. Is it what I was describing before, you know, using the Iridium? Was it like an HD with a heavy rubber duck attached to it, or something different?
No, I actually did not know what the ship was using. I assumed they were going through their regular satellite antenna up on the Lido deck. I was just using the cruise ship's desktop phone and punched in a calling card number, and it was routed presumably through the LEO or MEO Iridium satellite. That this was about 10 years ago. That's how they were doing the thing to test the thing anyway, I guess.
Oh, okay. That sounds great. Great. Yeah, I remember seeing in QST pictures of people working satellite using Iridium. For some reason, they had a picture of that in a QST years ago. And like the military, you know, they have that as well. But of course, then they have the, you know, they also have their military satellites. So, you know, I think we're a step away from, you know, using your cell phone. Although maybe they'll say you need a better cell phone. You know, maybe you get different frequencies or something different. I can picture people going out and, you know, buying, you know, $400 or $500 cell phones. So we'll see what happens. Very good, Frank. Back to you.
Yeah, well, considering the number of us who go out and buy $1,200 iPhones, it's not a stretch. I think the iPhone 14 can do emergency text, and there have been a number of occasions where people have been saved by emergency text to satellites when they didn't have cell phone service using the iPhone 14, and it sounded like the next generation iPhone will be able to talk directly to the next gen Starlink satellite. So that's coming pretty quickly, apparently.
Very good. I'm going to be left in the dust. You know, I got my Android and cell phone, and that's it. In fact, I should get another one. Keeps telling me I don't have enough. I don't have enough memory, so yeah, I have to delete apps that I don't use. It's ridiculous. But again, time marches on, you know. Yeah, but, I know a lot of people with the iPhone, of course. Very good. You know, what I want to mention is this balloon that NASA launched from New Zealand. You know, it's a new balloon. It's manufactured in Wallops Island, but this balloon was launched by them. So big, they said it's as big as a stadium. I still haven't figured out what the diameter is yet, but they said it's as big as a stadium. Do they mean it's as big as a football field? Is it, you know, 300 feet across? I could see that. But when they use the word stadium, you know, that would mean like 1,000 feet across or so. You know, they haven't really said. I saw pictures of it, you know, and going up. But when it goes up, it doesn't look all that big. It doesn't fully expand until it gets to the higher atmospheres. This thing went up to, you know, over 100,000 feet. You know, it's like, I don't know, they said up to 22-mile height. But when you get up that high, then it really does expand. And it's called they call it a super pressure balloon. balloon system. They have the other type, which is not like that, which is, has like an open duct to it. And those things don't last that long. But this type is super pressure type. It's a sealed system. And this will leave, you know, last for weeks on end, maybe months on end. And it's floated around by Antarctica. They have a system where it's going to actually circumnavigate Antarctica, going around and around that continent. And it takes 10 days for it to float all the way around. And because it's going over all the different latitudes, or correction, over the different longitudes, especially it's actually going around the Earth, even though it's down by Antarctica, so they actually consider it going around the Earth. They call it around the world in 10 days, which I guess NASA's trying to, bring up the fact about Jules Verne's book, Around the World in 80 Days, which is a bit of a misnomer, because that book, there was no balloon. There was no balloon in Jules Verne's book, Around the World in 80 Days. They went around the world, but trains and camels and all kinds of weird things. But no balloon. And what happened was they conflated the idea of two books that he had. Jules Verne had a book called 5 Weeks in a Balloon, which, of course, they really did have a balloon. It was 5 weeks crossing Africa. Now, that book came out before Around the World in 80 Days, and back in those days, it was a big deal learning about Africa, and all kinds of explorers went across Africa, so he created that book. Had nothing to do with going around the world. So it was an adventure story, but somehow eventually, because of a movie that came out back in the 50s, early 50s, which they did use a balloon for Around the World in 80 days. That's what happened. Any comments? This is WS2M. On this balloon, they do have a telescope. Now, it's the first of this type of balloon. So they put a telescope that they know is going to operate. And they said it's doing very well. The next one that they put up, which won't be too long from now, there's a high-tech, looks like a couple thousand-pound thing that they're going to attach to the bottom of this thing. Of course, it's got, it's a big telescope, transmitters, antennas, all sorts of stuff. It sounds expensive, but they say it's a lot cheaper than launching a $60 million rocket, for the price that SpaceX gets. Any comments? Okay. Bill Nelson, he's the administrator for NASA. He got to testify before the House Science Committee just a couple of days ago. And I saw it. They actually had it on C-SPAN and the NASA channel. But I watched most of it. And he made a couple of interesting comments regarding the space station itself. They definitely plan on deorbiting the space station just after 2030. He's guessing probably 2031 or so. So he made some comments that they're planning on cutting the budget to NASA by 20%. It's a movement to do that. He's like, you can't do that. If you do that, we're going to foul up this whole Artemis program. It'll delay things for another year, getting to the moon. A lot of statements. Talked about China. We really are in a race to the moon against China. Everybody's heading to the South Pole. He showed pictures of these craters that have frozen. They believe that they have frozen ice inside. Naturally, they could defrost the ice. They could get water. They could get oxygen, hydrogen fuel. China's planning on doing the same thing, and they're planning on going in the early 2030s as well. So that's why he wants to get, you know, he wants NASA to get there no later than 2028. Just going back to the original number they used to have years ago, then they pushed up to 2024. No way they were going to make that. So I think the earliest you'll see actual people landing on the moon will probably be 2027. So, by the way, Bill Nelson, you know, he knows his stuff. He went up on a space shuttle. He was a congressman at the time. But at the time they would think, well, this is becoming very commonplace. I think it's around the probably the 9th or 10th flight. And he went up on that. another politician went up, Gahn went up. He was a senator from Utah. Bill Nelson's from Florida. But he knows his stuff. They were asking him question after question. He had no problem answering it. He asked about, one guy asked him a question about the Europa Clipper mission going to, it's going to go to Jupiter and how that's going. And he got an answer for everything. And I thought it was pretty good. Any comments? All right, let me just talk about something I talked about earlier, that Japanese spacecraft that did not successfully land on the moon, but there's a couple of other ones, and they're being this one here is being made by Astrobiotic. Comes out of the
that
state
time complete,
and it's called the you've got two company has two landing spacecraft that are planned, Peregrine and the Griffin. The Peregrine is going to have maybe a couple hundred pounds as a payload, and Griffin will probably have, you know, up to 1,000 pounds. And again, this is being developed to help NASA. Once you have a crew and a base on the moon, you're going to need equipment. You're going to need food. You're going to need clothes. All kinds of stuff. And this will be able to supply them of anything they need in the future. Another company is called Intuitive Machines. They have a lander that's also being developed. They call it the IM for Intuitive Machines, IM-1. Anyway, that's scheduled to launch this June on a Falcon 9 rocket. So before this year, you know, before the year is out, probably in the fall, we'll be watching another possible landing. Sooner or later, one of these things have got to make it. Got three failures, not from this country. One from Israel, one from India, and now from Japan. The Astrobiotic and Intuitive Machines. Hopefully we'll make it. Any comments before I close? Okay, well, nothing hard. 73 guys, and we'll turn it back to Roy. Monday night is Club InfoNet, and followed by the Club Flop and Shop. We'll try to make that tomorrow night at 8:30. Not 8 o'clock. Not always thoughts at 8 o'clock. Back to you, Roy. AC2GS, WS2N, for the Space Net Report for the TechNet.
Thank you very much, Paul, as always. Thank you for all that you do with the Space Net Report, all that you do with the Technical Net, and all that you do with the club itself. We all appreciate it, and I appreciate it more than anyone. So thanks again. And thankfully, the weather conditions seem to have improved. Over the last 15, 20 minutes, the noise has melted away on your end and hopefully on mine as well. As per usual, I like to remind people Dick KQRIW, who started this whole thing, would end his technical nets with the advice to be kind to each other. That's always good advice. These days, it's especially good advice. And I like to remind people of the philosopher Epictetus, who said it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So try to keep an open mind. Learn something new every so often, if you can, at least every day. And so we're done for tonight. I want to thank everyone who participated and wish everyone well and hope that you'll come back to do this all over again next Sunday night at 8 p.m. Our rebels now are done. This is AC2GS, formally closing this episode of the Limon Technical Net. And bye.
Good night, Roy. 73.
73, Roy. BB2BX out.
Roy's signal was great. I didn't get a chance to tell him that. It's really improved as well. W2VL repeater.
Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Good morning. The time is 1:55 a.m. Temperature 57 degrees.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
WA2ACF.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Good morning. The time is 4:55 a.m. Mostly cloudy. Temperature 49 degrees.
W2VL repeater. This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Good morning. The time is 5:01 a.m. Mostly cloudy. Temperature 49 degrees.
KE2NK, listen.
W2VL repeater.
KE2NK, listen.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Good morning. The time is 6 a.m. Cloudy. Temperature 48 degrees.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Good morning. The time is 7 a.m. Mostly cloudy. Temperature 49 degrees.
W2VL repeater.